the divine souls. I've been speaking to you for the last few days on the topic of Guru, or the spiritual master. So there's a lot to understand about the nature of a God-realized saint. And the first thing to understand is that we can't recognize a saint through their external behavior or their looks. We have to try to find that nidhi they have inside of them, that treasure they have inside, which reveals their true divine status. But that's not easily ascertained just by looking at their outer appearance. So I gave you many examples to prove to you that if we're analyzing a saint according to the stereotype we normally keep in our mind as far as how a saint is supposed to dress and look and act, then if we went back through history and looked at all the different saints that we know are saints because it's documented in our scriptures, and we look at their behavior, if we had actually been there to witness that behavior, we would have said, no, this doesn't fit my idea of what a saint is, and we would have renounced them, or we would have crossed them off our list. No, this person cannot be a saint. I was telling you one example from the Bhagavatam yesterday, that when King Parikshit heard the description of Maharas from Shukadevji Paramahans, he also got a question. That this seems to be something which would be, well, it's obviously against the dharma of the Vedas. If someone just analyzes it from that point of view, it looks like a wrong action. Now, Parikshit had already brought up a similar question. In the beginning, see, the description of Maharas takes several chapters, 5 chapters in the Bhagavatam. So in the very beginning, he also brought up the question when Shukadevji said that, oh, Krishna played on his flute, so all the gopis came running, and he questioned that, "How this does not seem right to me, why is God doing such a thing?" So at that time, Shukadevji scolded him. Uktam purastade tasya. I told you, didn't I, previously? Because again, before that, he had explained that, you see, Shishupal attached his mind to Shri Krishna with enmity and attained him, because whichever way you attach your mind to God, it becomes one. So attachment can be of a positive kind or a negative kind in the world as well. If you love someone or you hate someone, they equally enter your heart and become a part of who you are. Their qualities enter your heart. So he had explained that you see, if Shishupal could attain Shri Krishna through enmity, the gopis had positive feelings of love for Bhagwan, for God, who's beyond Maya, so why shouldn't they go beyond Maya? He had already explained all of that to him twice. Now the third time he's asking, what? Bhagwan did what? Isn't that against dharma? Why is he doing that? So at this point, Shukadevji stopped the description of Maharas. He didn't go any further. He said, you can only tell such a high thing to a qualified person, so I shouldn't go any more deeply into this discussion of Maharas. But he did answer his question. Dharma vyatikramo drishta ishvaranam cha sahasam tejiyasam nadoshaya vahnehi sarvabhujo yatha. He said that ishvaranam, ye ishvar ke log, meaning God and God realized saints, they are tejiyasam. They're like fire. So just like fire swallows, devours everything, but always remains in its same state, doesn't matter what you throw in the fire just keeps on devouring and burning, and it itself remains pure. Similarly, God and saints, God and the God-realized saints, they're unaffected by their actions. He goes on to explain, Yat pada pankaja paraganishe vatripta yoga prabhavo tuvita akhilava karma bandha svairam charanti munayo pinanahyamanas tasye chayat tava pushah kuta eva bandhah. He says that these saints are swairam charanti. They go where they want, when they want, they do what they want. And not the same, it doesn't mean the same thing as if one of us does manmani. Meaning, I don't care what's written in Vedas, I'll do whatever I want. Main Bhagwan ko nahi manta, Ved ko bhi nahi manta, Karma ko bhi nahi manta. I don't believe in God, I don't care what's written in the Vedas, I don't believe in the law of karma, that I'll get any kind of consequence for my behavior. We can say such things, but in the end, what happens? We're bound to receive the consequences of our karma. Doesn't matter, we can go on saying from our mouth, we don't believe in any of this, but we go on receiving the results of that karma. It's like you can look in the mirror and say, okay, now I'm going to slap hard on my face, but I'm not going to feel pain. You can say it, but if you slap, you're going to feel pain. So you do the karma, you have to get the result. But saints are truly swairam charanti. They're beyond the bondage of karma now, because God Himself is beyond the bondage of karma, and they've reached Him. They perform all of their actions through yoga maya, whereas our actions are performed through maya. Maya is the material power that binds all of us. So all of our thoughts are mayic. Go go char jahan lagi man jai, so sab maya jane hu bhai. In the Ramayana, it's also written that any maya-baddha jeev can only think of mayic things. Whatever he will imagine will only be mayic. So all of our actions and all of our thoughts are mayic. But a saint and God, they perform their actions through the power of yoga maya, which is God's personal power, that allows them to stay established in their divine state, yet perform ordinary looking actions. I mean, when you think about it, all actions are going to appear ordinary, right? What can someone do physically? Whatever we do, the same thing God and the saints can do. There's nothing extra they can do. So from outside, their actions are always going to appear ordinary to us. But in addition to that, they also seem to do angry actions, greedy actions, desirous actions. What about those actions? They're also performed through the power of yoga maya, which allows them to perform such mayic looking actions while maintaining their divine status on the inside. So they have that special power that allows them to be able to do that. So when someone wonders that what about the fact that people are generally going to imitate the actions of saints and God, so shouldn't they be following what they've said in the Vedas? Shouldn't they be following what they preach? Shukadevji also answers this question. Nai tat samachare jatu manasapi hyanishvarah. Tesham yat svavacho yuktam buddhimans tat samacharet. He says that would be a big mistake. To imitate a saint's actions or God's actions would be disastrous. Manasapi Hyanishwaraha. You shouldn't even think of it. Even in a dream, you shouldn't think of imitating God's actions or a saint's actions. Vinashyatya. Aapka sarvanash ho sakta hai. Kyon? Yatha rudrobdhijam visham. Rudra, Bhagwan Shiva, he was called to swallow that halahal poison, the most poisonous vish, which came out, the first thing that came out from the ocean of milk when they did the samudra manthan. So he swallowed that haste hue. Everybody else was dying from the fumes of that poison, the fumes alone. He swallowed the whole thing. If we touched even a drop of that, we'd be done, finished, instantly killed. So you see, if someone has the power, they can do something. If someone doesn't have the power, it's dangerous for them. So we know God and saints have this power of yogamaya that allows them to do any kind of action, but from inside, they're established in their divine state. So they have no effect from those actions whatsoever. Nothing that's happening around them affects them internally. Nothing that they're doing affects them internally. They're not bound by those actions, nor are they mentally disturbed by those actions, because they're not attached in any of those actions. So since we have not achieved such a state, we don't have that power of yogamaya, how could we imagine that we could also do what the saints and God are doing? Like if you go to a circus and you watch an acrobat walking on the tightrope with no safety net below, and you think, he makes that look so easy. Like he just took a stroll across the wire. I'm going to try it too. You climb up there and get on the wire. That'll be, again, the end of you. So you see, we in the world, we know we have to behave according to our status, according to our ability or our power. We can't try something that we're unqualified for. We'll get ourselves in trouble. So in the same way, the actions of God and the saints are not always to be imitated. Shukdev ji said, Vinashyatya charan maudhyad yatharudrobdhijam visham. Says, don't dream of imitating the actions of God and the saints. However, Ishvaranam vachah satyam tathaiva charanam kvachit tesham yat svavacho yuk. Tam buddhimans tat samacharet. God and the saints perform actions of different levels, meaning they're introducing behavior which would be fit for different people at different levels, because there are many different people at many different levels. So they could be introducing actions according to how an ordinary person is supposed to behave, or maybe how a sadhak is supposed to behave, one following the path of bhakti. They may be introducing actions which are meant to be followed by a beginner on the path of bhakti, or a very highly evolved person following the path of bhakti, or that other saints could follow. So they do many types of actions. God does many types of actions, and the saints do many types of actions. Just like when you're teaching a child to count, maybe you put three apples on one side and four oranges on the other side, and you say, now add these. So we say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So what is 3 plus 4? 7. Okay, so that's the first level, right? He has to learn like that. Then later, when he grows up, you can ask him when he's half asleep, hey, 3 plus 4? 7. So he's at a higher level. Everything is like this. Spiritual progress also happens in stages. So not every action that the saints perform would be applicable to every level of individual. The safest thing is, Mahajano yena gata sapantha. Veda Vyasji says, the path that they've shown you, do that. Sometimes parents say to their kids, somewhat facetiously, do as I say, not as I do. Right? Kids want to do what you do. They don't understand that, no, I'm a child. I can't do everything my parents are doing. Some of the things they're doing, it's okay for them, but it would be bad for me or wrong for me. So the parents say, don't do as I do, do as I say. Do what I'm telling you to do. So that's the best policy to follow with the actions of God and the saints. Do what they have told us to do. Don't just blindly do what they have done, because many of their actions may be beyond our capability to try to imitate. And if we do try to imitate them, then we end up doing a very bad action, which we'll end up being punished for. And we may say, oh, but Krishna did it. When he did it, it was not pop. If we do the same thing, it's pop for us. So Krishna stealing butter is obviously, he's not doing a dharma sthapana by going into the gopis' houses and stealing butter. He's not setting an example that he expects others to follow. Right? This is a different kind of action he's performing. There's a different reason why he's doing that. God has many, many reasons behind each and every action he performs. We look at it in a very simplistic way, judging by our sense of right and wrong. But that doesn't apply to God's actions or the saints' actions. Krishna has so many things to consider. Oh, this gopi is desiring for my darshan, but she's not allowed to go out of the house. Her mother-in-law won't let her go out of the house. So let me use the excuse of going to steal butter as a way to give her darshan. I'll sneak into the house and then she'll catch me. She'll get to see me in that way. So he has so many reasons. Another gopi may be churning the butter thinking, Krishna snuck into that gopi's house and stole her butter. It would be so exciting, so thrilling if he also entered my house in such a way. Krishna knows the thoughts of every person. So he says, oh, I also have to fulfill this devotee's wish. Aham bhakta paradhina. He says to Durvasa in the Bhagavatam that I am bound by my devotees. Aham bhakta paradhino hyasvatantra ivadvija sadhu bhirgrasta hridayo bhaktair bhakta jana priya. He says, they've captured my heart. In fact, he says, unhone kha liya. Jaise hriday koi khane ka cheez hai. Anyway, that's the words he's using. They've captured me. They've got me. So now whatever they desire, I have to fulfill their desire. Whatever the gopis are thinking, Krishna is doing. He's finding one way or another to fulfill their divine desires. Can any soul know all of the reasons? I'm just telling you a couple of the subtle reasons behind one simple leela of Krishna stealing butter. There could be another 50 or 100 reasons behind each individual act of stealing butter, depending on the situation and the saint involved. We could never understand all of that until we reach that level. So it's better not to apply our intellect in judging God's actions or in trying to analyze them, because as far as we're concerned, those actions are simply to be used for meditation. If you like thinking of young Krishna doing such naughty acts, such sweet leelas, then think of that as a meditation. Just remember such leelas. when he's young, when he's a teenager, when he's full grown, whatever appeals to you. And that becomes a way of doing bhakti. You're actually purifying your mind by remembering these lilas. And that's another reason he revealed such lilas, so that all the different kinds of people could find something that's attractive to their mind. I was teaching some kids at the last Radha Madhav Dham family camp. I was reading from Radha Govinda Geet. In Radha Govinda Geet, Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj has given a chronological account of many, many of Radha and Krishna's leelas, similar to what's in the Bhagavatam, following the same kram. So anytime I got to a leela where Krishna was fighting against some demon, all the little boys, I think the age group was 6 to 13. So all the little boys would just say, you'd just see them brighten up as soon as I'd mention. And then one time this demon came and they'd all go like, they want to hear all about the demons. And the girls, they're not that interested. I'm saying in general, some of the girls may be and some of the boys may not be. But what I mean is, someone might be wondering, well, what was the need for all those leelas with the demons, where Krishna had to kill those demons? What was the need to fight a war? I explained to you yesterday that all of the people involved in the war, all of the demons, everybody, they're all saints who came to play a part in these leelas. And they're important for many reasons, but one of the reasons that I understand is that there are people who like that kind of leela. Oh, Krishna was a great warrior. Ram was a great warrior. Oh, Krishna, even when he was so young, he killed that demon, he killed that demon. So that attracts the mind of some little boys, some older people. Who knows what kind of leela attracts whose mind? The point is that a soul has to attach his mind to God. Any which way, yena kena prakarena manah krishne niveshayet. Rupa Goswami says it doesn't matter what way, just attach your mind to him. Although for us, we have to do it positively. We can't behave like Ravan and say, I'm also going to oppose Bhagwan. That's only possible, first of all, during the avatar itself. And second of all, you have to be powerful enough to oppose him. So we have to do anukul bhakti. We have to love him through positive feelings. But you can think of any kind of leela of Krishna that appeals to you. So we understand that we're not meant to imitate all the actions of the saints and God. Those actions they performed which are in accordance with their teachings for our level, that we can follow. See, what do you teach a person, the general public, when you come to the mandir? Don't point your feet at the murtis. It's not polite. The feet are the lowest part of your body. You walk on them. If someone is going to show you respect, then they may bow to your feet. But otherwise, you don't show someone your feet, especially not God. So someone may say, but God is everywhere. God is in the floor I walk on. God is in my shoes. God is in my feet. So why shouldn't I point my feet at God? He's in my feet as much as he's in the murti. This is a fact. It's true. But this philosophy can be followed by the one who always remembers that every moment. We're not at that level. We're at the level where we see God in the murti and we forget that he's everywhere else. We forget he's in our feet. We forget he's omnipresent. So until we get to that level where for us, God is everywhere and we always remember that every moment, you can say we're at a lower level. We're at the beginner's level where we see God in the murti and we pay special respect to the murti. The saint could come and, you know, the saint could do arti to the murti. the saint could sleep on the floor with his feet pointed right at the murti, it makes no difference for the saint, because the saint practically experiences God everywhere. So it literally makes no difference for him, and it may be the same for a very highly evolved devotee as well, who's not yet God realized. But for us, we have to observe such formalities. There are certain formalities we are required to observe. So you see, if someone comes in and sees a saint lying with his feet pointed at the murti, and then he thinks, oh, I'll also do the same because he was doing that. No. Follow those actions or imitate those actions of the saint, which are in accordance with the teachings he's given you for your level. This is how we're supposed to take it. So we understand now, through all of this, that we cannot recognize a saint through his behavior. Saints can, they absolutely defy all the stereotypes. I gave you many historical examples that showed saints were married, saints had kids, saints lived ordinary lives, saints were uneducated and illiterate. Saints did actions which appeared to be angry. So all of these things are confusing to a person if they don't understand the philosophy. If you do understand the philosophy, you know this much, that whatever I'm seeing on the outside, that's not the reality. The reality is something that's hidden inside the saint. So what this means is, if we want to try to recognize a saint, someone decides, you know, I need the help of a God-realized saint, the first step is knowing what not to do in trying to recognize the saint. So the first thing is, don't judge the saint by what they're wearing. Don't judge the saint by their behavior. Let's say some true God-realized saint has given you some teachings, and you're following those teachings, you're doing bhakti now, and you're getting the benefit. It's changing you inside. You can feel it. You can see it. So one day you invite that saint, you get the chance, you meet the saint face to face, and maybe somehow through Krishna's grace, the saint comes and visits your house. And while he's there, you notice you had maybe a diamond ring or something sitting there. Maybe a couple $1,000 worth of value. It just happened to be there, and you noticed when the saint was sitting there, put it in his pocket. You didn't say anything. But then when the saint left, you were thinking to yourself, I thought he was a saint, but he stole my diamond ring? So think about it. The saint is giving you divine teachings, which, if you follow it correctly, is going to result in you getting God realized. And you're practically experiencing the benefit of that in your life. So you know, yes, it must be a saint. And you're prepared to throw all of that out because he stole something from you. Most people, 99.9% of people, would say, well, he can't be a saint. He stole. No, I'm renouncing him. And you'll throw away all the benefit you were getting. It means that diamond ring is more valuable to you than the spiritual benefit you were getting by following the teachings of that saint. I'm just making up a hypothetical example. Would it ever happen? Probably not. But what if it did? How would you react? So we shouldn't look at the behavior of the saint. Saints' actions don't need to be explained. There are ways to recognize a true saint, and one of the most important things is to understand how to get the benefit of the saint's association and in what way the saint graces us. I'll get to that in a few minutes. So, being aware of the internal benefit we're getting from the saint is the most important thing. And if ignoring that, or even before we've gotten the chance to experience that, we start analyzing all the external things, we end up missing an opportunity. Because we could have met many saints in our life, and we said, oh, he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt, he can't be a saint. Oh, he's married, he can't be a saint. He has kids, he can't be a saint. I saw him get angry, he can't be a saint. If we use this as our pamana, as our way of measuring who's a saint and who isn't, not only will we deny ourselves the association of true saints, but we'll open ourselves up to be fooled by the people who are posing as saints. Because they all know, all the ones out there in Kali Yuga, there are hundreds and thousands of them, who want to fool people into thinking they've attained God when they haven't. So in their bank account, they've got zero. But they're writing million-dollar checks. The saint has a full bank account, brimming to the top. So when he writes a check, there's power in that check. When that fake saint, that person posing as a saint, writes a check, there's no power in it. It's just flowery words. Yet they prey upon our beliefs that a saint is supposed to be physically renounced from the world, not own anything, not have a family, no spouse, no children. They prey on that belief that we have. So we're so easily fooled. Oh, this one is wearing orange robes and has long hair and a beard, and he's a sannyasi, and he speaks nicely about God. Oh, he must be a saint. Any one of you, within 1 hour, could have that look, right? Go home, change into some clothes like this, put a tikka on. Okay, maybe it would take you a little longer to grow your hair and beard. That takes some patience. But you see, when we believe that a saint has to be like that externally, how easy are we making it for the one who wants to fool us? There's a Sanskrit shloka that says, Meena snana para pani pavana bhung meshashta parna shana. It says, if you're just looking at the external things, like, for instance, let's say someone says, I live on the bank of Ganga. I bathe in Ganga every day. So he must have attained a really advanced spiritual height, right? This verse says, fish are born in Ganga. They spend their whole life swimming in Ganga. Are they spiritually advanced because of that? Pani pavana bhung. There are snakes, if they go a long time without eating, what do they live on? Pavan. They just live on the air they're breathing. So, some people say, oh, this great yogi, this great muni, I met him, I went to Himalaya, he doesn't eat anything. He just breathes the air and doesn't eat or drink anything. See, people think, oh, that's so great. Okay, well, does that mean that snake, you could go and make that snake your guru too? What's the big deal, living on air? Me shashcha parnashana. People say, oh, he just lives in the jungle and eats leaves. Nothing else. He's so renounced. He must be such a great saint. There are goats who live on leaves. Make the goat your guru. So just looking at these external things are of no value. Oh, ye Moni Baba hai. He doesn't speak. He hasn't spoken in 10 years. Oh, people flock to him. Why is he not speaking? because he would have no chance of answering your question if you asked him something. Yeah, he doesn't even know the names of the scriptures, let alone what's in them, the actual philosophy, and practically how to explain it. So, apan mauni ban jaye. Yeah, it's easy. Take a 12-year vrat that then his disciples tell when everybody comes, he's taken a 12-year vrat, mon vrat. He's not going to speak. Then after that 12 years goes, he takes another 12-year vrat. By then, his life may be over. Chutti. He never had to explain anything to anyone. So what's the big deal, taking maun? People flock to such. Oh, ye phalahari hai. Phalahari, there are parrots who live on fruit too. So we look at all these external things. It's like a gimmick, right? In business, you need to have a gimmick. So these are like gimmicks. Oh, ye Moni Baba hai, ye Phalahari Baba hai. So we just get fooled by this. Since we're looking at how not to recognize a saint by these external things, let's cover a couple other topics. How not to recognize a saint. A saint does not give var. People think that, but when God appears before his devotees, he says, varam bruhi. Ask for anything, I'll fulfill your wish. This is for a saint, a God, the soul who has surrendered to God. He becomes God realized as God appears in front of him. So that's the tradition. At that point, when God appears in front of that God realized saint, he says, what do you want? Your devotion is complete. Now I can give you anything. What do you want? Until then, we'll talk about this more when we talk in detail about how to do bhakti. Until then, you can't get any boon from God. Or even a God-realized saint. Never mind someone posing as a saint. Even a God-realized saint will not give you any boon. Why? I keep referring to this verse of Bhagavatam. Tam bhranshayami sampadbhyo yasyache chamyanugraham. Shri Krishna says, if I want to grace you, I'll start removing the objects of your attachment. Why? Because you become attached to them and you forget about me. Janmaishwarya shruta shri bhi redhamana madha. Uman naivarhatyabhidhatum vai tvamakinchana gocharam. Bhagavatam, Kunti Devi is saying to Shri Krishna, tvamakinchana gocharam. You are attainable by those who consider themselves to be destitute. Because when they feel destitute from inside, they surrender to you. Whereas, if they have great things in this world, whatever great things they have, like a high and noble birth, there's a pride. I am this person's son. I am this person's daughter. My family has this status. It's very hard to maintain that humbleness. It's a very subtle thing. So Kunti Devi is actually saying, Krishna, vipadah santu na shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru. Oh, Jagadguru, Shri Krishna, you please give me misfortune at every step of my life. He said, why? Because if whatever I have that's good and great, I'm going to get attached to it. It's going to give me subtle pride and that's going to prevent me from surrendering to you. So please, give me lots of misfortune and suffering in my life. So when this is the actual philosophy of our scriptures, then anyone who's sitting on some asana, sitting in some ashram, in some mandir, pretending to give var, give boons to people who comes to him or come to her, they're fooling people. A true saint would never give any boon. If you go to some saint and the saint gives you some boon like that, then you just ask them, meaning the one posing as a saint, that, Guruji, you're giving me this worldly boon? You're blessing me with this, some great worldly thing? But you yourself have renounced such things. Why did you renounce them? Because there must be greater happiness in God, right? Yes, of course, beta. Then why are you giving such things to me? Koi jawab nahi hoga unke paas. So a true saint does not give var, does not give boons. So remember that. If someone is doing that, it's a show, it's a gimmick. Same thing with ashirvad. I mean, basically the same thing, var, ashirvad. If a saint could give an ashirvad, don't you think he would give you God realization? If he had the power to change your life, why wouldn't he just make you God realized? Aapka mangna khatam ho jaye, wahin par. If you attain God, you get everything. There's nothing more to desire once you get God. So instead of having to go back to the saint bar bar, mangne ke liye, oh, I also need this, please bless me with that. Why doesn't he just give you God realization? You'll never have to ask for anything ever again. Because it's all an act. The saint is already blessing us. He's blessing this whole world by his very presence. And he's blessing us with his teachings. He's gracing those souls internally who try to follow those teachings. So we already have his ashirvad. But those who are posing as saints, they try to say something just to make people think that, oh, when I go to this Babaji, then I get something. I get some blessings in my life. I had no child, and then I went to this Babaji, and he gave me the blessing that, oh yes, you'll have a child. Then I had a son born to me. This naive person doesn't know that that son was already destined in their prarabdh. It was already written. And prarabdh can't be changed. So if it wasn't written in your prarabdh, no saint could give you that, and no saint would give you that against the rules of karma. And here's this person posing as a saint, telling you, oh yes, yes, I'll fulfill that wish of yours. I'll fulfill your worldly desires. So it's an act. It's just meant to fool people. That person has no such power to fulfill your wish, but you have faith in him because he's wearing orange robes, and we generally respect people in that position. So we're easily fooled. And conversely, the saint does not give a curse. As I told you, it's an internal matter. All of those stories you've heard of saints giving shrap, they're cursing each other. It's part of the leela, like Parikshit got cursed. But without that curse, he wouldn't have been dying in 7 days. And if he hadn't have been dying in 7 days, he wouldn't have gone to the bank of Ganga and met Shukadevji and asked him all the questions that led Shukadevji to tell him the Bhagavatam. And if Shukadevji hadn't told him the Bhagavatam, we wouldn't know about the Bhagavatam. That was the first public recitation of the Bhagavat. So it means that curse brought about the revelation of the Bhagavatam to the entire world. So it's... That's why I told you, Aishrap is actually Shreyaprad. It's to bring about the Kalyan of the whole world. So these kinds of curses are not to cause harm. They're actually to bring about a certain event or string of events that have to happen. But a saint would never curse an ordinary soul. I've met people who have told me, oh, I follow this Guruji, and he or she has told me that if I ever leave them, they'll curse me and this bad thing will happen in my family. Many people have met and continue to follow such so-called gurus. When what is the reality? Par upakar vachan man kaya sant sahaj swabhav khagraya. Par dukh dukh sukh sukh dekhe par. The saint's nature is that if he sees someone else happy, he feels happy. If he sees someone else suffering, he feels dukhi as well. And it's the saint's nature to do para upakar. He wants to help other people. He wants to help them reach God so they can also get perfect happiness. This is the nature of the saint. He can't help that nature. There's a story that a saint saw a scorpion that was drowning in a river. So, because he's bound by his own nature to help, the saint went to pick up that scorpion. The scorpion stung him. So, as a just an automatic reaction, he pulled his hand back and the scorpion fell back in. And he said, oh no, I have to save him. He again reached down. The scorpion again stung him. This was going on. Someone finally came and said, Babaji, don't you know it's the nature of a scorpion to sting? He said, yes, but it's my nature to help. He can't help his nature, and I can't help my nature. Swami Haridas Ji, the disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ji that I mentioned a few days ago, one time the people of the town where he was living so much opposed him that he was teaching about doing kirtan, singing Radha Krishna name. There was a group of people who were so opposed to that, they actually beat him up and they thought they had killed him and they threw him in the river, left him for dead. But he regained consciousness and he came ashore. And when he came back to Mahaprabhuji, Mahaprabhuji saw what had happened. He pleaded with Mahaprabhuji, please don't give them any punishment. Mahaprabhuji is Sri Krishna himself. All he has to do is call his Sudarshan Chakra and put an end to them. He pleaded, no, 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 please. They don't know. They don't know any better. So I'll keep teaching and maybe they'll learn and they'll be able to improve. So you see, the nature of a saint is never that of revenge for any reason. The saint only desires to bring the souls towards God. So for that reason, a saint has no interest in giving worldly boons, because how is that going to help a soul come towards God? The saint would never give any kind of curse. And for a similar reason, saints do not make an exhibition of any kind of power, what we call siddhis. There are four kinds of siddhis. Three are material types and one is divine. The three material types correspond with the three material gunas. So you have tamas siddhis, rajas siddhis, and sattvic siddhis. These are all material powers, not godly, not divine. So what is tamas siddhi? Tamas siddhi, there are a couple of types. One type is also called bhoot siddhi. There are some souls who, after dying, meaning they leave this body, the soul doesn't die, they don't go on immediately to their next birth because of their extreme worldly attachments and maybe their bad actions. They're caught in pretlok, the spirit world. So those spirits in the spirit world, they generally can't interact with this physical world, but sometimes they may make contact with someone who has that ability. So there may be someone who has some ability to contact a spirit. Bhut siddh karte, that's what they call it. They actually get control over that spirit. And then they use him to do some tricks. Like, let's say you show your hands, see, they're empty. And because you have control over that spirit, you tell that spirit to bring over in the back there, there's some almonds or there's some flower petals or something. Bring that. And he brings it and secretly puts it in his hand. And then he says, see, I magically made this appear. So people will flock to such a person. Oh, he has divine power. It is very far from divine power. It's not sattvic, it's not rajas, it's tamas. You know what Gita says? Adho gacchanti tamasah. Those who do such tamas actions go to narak. That's the outcome of such actions. So these kinds of bhut siddhis, they're actually considered to be tamas. And the result is the one using those siddhis is punished for that because it's considered to be a bad action. And of course, fooling someone else into thinking you have divine power is an extremely bad action. Someone's desiring God, and you have no way of teaching him about reaching God. You yourself don't know. And you're going to fool that person into following you. Could there be a worse sin than that? So these tamas, siddhis, are obviously, they have nothing to do with God. Someone may not even have such siddhis, but be able to perform some tricks like a magician. If you go to Las Vegas, you can pay to see a show and you'll be amazed. He can do the same kind of thing. It looks like he makes things appear out of thin air. So if that magician left the stage in Las Vegas, grew his beard and hair, put on some orange robes, and then said, "Oh, everybody, I have divine power," and he started representing himself as some kind of saint, hundreds of thousands of people would flock to that person. See how easily we're fooled by external things? How do you know? The person may have a bhoot siddhi, or they may just know some sleight of hand, some magic tricks, optical illusions. Whatever it may be, it's of no value on the spiritual path. A little bit above this are rajas siddhis, and beyond this are the sattvic siddhis, which are the true yogic siddhis. There are many levels of yogic siddhis, 23 different siddhis described, but out of those, 8 are called ashtamaha siddhiya, the 8 greatest yogic powers, like anima, lagima, garima. So in this, the yogi actually gets the power to do amazing things. Anima, he can make his body tiny, like an atom, like the size of an atom. Imagine being able to do that. You could go anywhere. No one would notice you. Lagima, he can make his body as light as a feather and just blow away in the wind. Garima, can make himself big and heavy like a mountain, so that even a crane couldn't lift him. Prakamya, he has the power to, like, just whatever he desires, make it appear, material things, not divine things. Like one time, one yogi, there was a big boulder up in the mountains where he was living, and inside that boulder, he created a whole world. And he was the ruler of that world. So within the material bounds, the yogi at that stage has almost like powers of creation, you can say, like Brahma almost. But these are only material powers. Sage Patanjali, the foremost proponent of this path of yoga, which leads to getting these yogic siddhis, he says, samadha vupasarga vyutthane siddhaya. These siddhis are actually obstacles on the path because they're not divine attainments. They're simply landmarks on the way that the yogi realizes, okay, if this siddhi has manifested itself, then it means I've reached this level. But I'm not done. I have to keep going. If that yogi gets attached to that siddhi and starts using it, then he falls. He loses his yogic power. The more you use it, you actually lose it. You lose your power. And eventually, he develops more worldly attachments by using and getting attached to these siddhis. And those that he tries to influence by showing these siddhis, they also get confused because they don't know. Remember, who is a guru? The God-realized saint is a guru. The yogi with these siddhis is not even God-realized. He's still under Maya. If he died right now, he'd be reborn, just like you or I would be. He can in no way help you reach God. Only once he becomes God-realized, he can. So let's say some great yogi, although there are no such known yogis in the world today, but let's say some yogi knew how to levitate, and he comes floating down out of the mountains, doesn't need to take an Air India flight, just flies like Hanumanji across the ocean and comes here to New York City, and you see him coming down into the city. Everyone will flock, "Oh, ye to siddha mahapurush honge." And we'd be fooled. See again how easily we're fooled by the external things. Don't look for the powers. A saint, a true saint, has powers beyond this. Mukti is the fourth siddhi. It's a divine siddhi. Through that, the saint is free from the effect of maya. But even that is not desirable, as I'll tell you further ahead. There's something else more desirable beyond mukti. So anyway, a saint has God's power. Sarva deva mayo guru. Shri Krishna says, whatever power I have, the guru has. The God-realized saint has Krishna's power. So what couldn't he do? What amazing powers couldn't he display in the world? Could do anything, but doesn't. There may be certain circumstances that arise from time to time where the saint, for some reason, has to use some power like that, and people might notice, he has some kind of power. But a saint never does it as a planned exhibition in front of masses of people to impress people and try to gain a following. If it happens, it happens incidentally. But it's not a part of his prachar that this is how I'm going to show my powers and people will come. No, a true saint doesn't do such a thing. The saint wants to teach the souls the importance of God realization and teach them the path to God and then hope that they follow it. So none of that has anything to do with siddhis. It's a distraction. So now we understand what not to look for in a saint. Don't look at the dress. Don't look at the outer behavior. Don't look at the lifestyle, whether married or not married. More than half of the saints in history have actually been married. More than half. Well, more than half. So don't look at that. Don't look at, or you can say, if you see someone who's promising some kind of boon or blessing, or who's giving a curse, or who's making a display of some kind of siddhi, then you can also avoid that person. But we still have to know how to recognize. We know how not to recognize. And we know some things that if we see them, then we should avoid that person. But what about the true saint? How can we recognize the true saint? That I will explain to you tomorrow. बोलिए श्रीमत् सद्गुरु सरकार की जय